Well, hello and welcome to the Wednesday Word. This is the Desert Spring Church podcast coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. We are here on campus at Desert Spring Church, and my name is Julie. I will be the host of today's episode. I serve as the Director of Connectional Ministries here on church. And we have a very first-time podcast guest that I'm very excited to introduce to you. We have Vanessa Jewell here in the house. And Vanessa, you are one of the first people that I first got to know when I came to Desert Spring. We share some things in common. We both are mothers of two adult boys. I know that our boys, we watched them grow up together, and we're still being, all that is to be the mother of sons that we share. So I appreciate that. You have done a lot of things here at Desert Spring Church. You taught the youth budgeting. We'll talk about that program, and you're involved in the prayer shawl ministry, and I'm sure many other things. When I first came, it was the summertime, and y'all were like, hey, we're going to the pool, we hang out at the pool, like all y'all hung out at the pool. I'm like, well, I don't hang out at the pool. So anyway, but we got to know each other through youth group and many other things. So I'd love for you to introduce yourself and tell your listeners, our listeners, how long you've been here at Desert Spring and kind of some of the things you've been involved with here.
My name is Vanessa Jewell, and I moved back to Vegas in 2010 after a divorce. I was living at Chattanooga prior to that, and we went to a Methodist church there. So Desert Spring is the first place we tried when we came here, and we really didn't feel like there was a need to go anywhere else. They had programs that met all of our needs. I volunteered at Vacation Bible School for many years with Janet and Crafts. I tried to start a single moms group, but it never really became what I had envisioned it to be. I taught financial peace after Herb Steggy gave that up. And I also taught several rounds of Generation Change, which is the youth financial peace class. I was a lay leader, and I've been on the prayer shawl ministry, knitting prayer shawls for people that are in need or are facing tough times. And throughout this journey that we're going to talk about, you'll see those women in the prayer shawl ministry were just so critical in helping me through what I went through, and I don't know what I would have done without them.
They are beautiful souls, and I want to be in that group. I just never seem to be able to. I can't knit for one, but
we will teach you
just to hang out. I know, but it is a great group of women. So yeah, you've done a lot here at Desert Spring, and I know people are going to be anxious to hear your story. It's a great story. It's a powerful story to me. I know you think it's just an ordinary story, but yeah, listen, listeners, Vanessa was like, I'm just ordinary and there's nothing. Yeah, that's not true. So I feel really strongly about the power of our stories and the importance of sharing our journeys with other, to help other people grow in their faith. It's one of the main reasons we have a church podcast, to be able to share our stories and learn from each other. So I thank you for your willingness to be willing to come and be a part of the podcast. Last year, I preached on the importance of sharing our stories, and I highlighted a few people's stories, and yours was one of them. Your unfolding story that many folks are familiar with. If you're on the prayer chain, you know very well Vanessa's story. And first of all, you are such a beautiful writer, and your prayers really touched so many people, and sometimes it just felt like reading poetry. There are a few people that submit prayer requests that just feel just so God-inspired, and so, and you're one of them. I know that they were written at a time when you were going through which I believe must have been the hardest time. I guess you can share that today of your life. Yet they were all just filled with so much hope and encouragement. I received so much feedback from people, just how moved they were by your prayers. So first of all, I thank you for sharing that. It's a difficult, vulnerable, painful, a challenging time to go through. And a lot of us could just turn inwards for that, but you turned toward people that you knew would pray for you and also that would be touched by your story. So,
yeah, I decided when I got diagnosed, I wasn't sure whether I should just tell people or if I should keep it private, what it would be like at work. And I realized that I was going to lose my hair and people were going to know that I was sick. And instead of people just talking and making up reasons or not knowing what they should say, I just decided I'm just going to let people know, and it stops all the rumors and all of that. So I just became very transparent about it. You know, my life has been pretty easy. The two difficult things I've been through in my life are divorce and cancer. And for just a little background knowledge, for you to understand how difficult cancer was for me, I'm not a person who can deal with any sort of medical anything, you know, yeah. Shots, blood work, you know, everything is like a major ordeal for me. I was having panic attacks, and even before this diagnosis, it was extremely difficult for me. So as you can imagine, everything I had to go through really was more than me and what I could do on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I thought this was a good time to talk to you in particular, because right now Pastor David is preaching a sermon series on doubt. Yesterday's was actually unanswered prayers, so that is interesting. But doubt is a place that we often go when we're faced with these life and death struggles like cancer. I had what I would call cancer light, right? I had thyroid cancer. It's the easy cancer. It's the quick cancer, you know. Nevertheless, when they tell you that word, when they say that word to you, just that flood, I can relate to the flood of emotions and thoughts that first go through your mind when you first hear it, which for me was like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
That's not happening. So yeah, I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, I've always been very healthy. I mean, I'm not the fittest person in the world, but I've always ate pretty well and tried to get some exercise, and I rest well. So, you know, when I first got diagnosed, it was like, why me? You know, I've looked after myself. I'm youngish. If you ask my kids, they would tell you that I'm not.
You're young.
But, you know, it came like a ton of bricks, and I was in shock. Like, I how could this be? So, you know, there was a lot of why me, and, you know, I've done all the right things, and I'm, you know, to a point in my career and in my life, like I've just finished raising my kids, and it's like time for me again. And this was a real twist in the road that I hadn't expected. You know, and then it being a medical thing, I thought, I don't have what it takes to get through this. And I know I don't. So, you know, I told God, I can't do this. And I'm sure that anybody who has a heavy diagnosis, you know, has kind of some of the same thoughts. I really didn't know anyone else who had multiple myeloma. And then later I realized that's what Pastor David's father had. And so it was a lot of unknowns and a heavy diagnosis to have an incurable cancer.
Yeah, and it took a little minute to get the diagnosis. There was some uncertainty for a while, I know also. So by the time the diagnosis came, you probably weren't expecting that.
Yes, it started in July of 2022. I had COVID for the first time, and the only time I had it. And then I went back to work. I'm a teacher. I went back to work in August, and it was maybe September, and I just was not feeling rested ever. I was sleeping all weekend. I would go home, and I'd be in bed, like, almost after work, and I just wasn't right. I couldn't put my finger on anything. And the girl I share an office with looked at me and said, look, Vanessa, I know you really well, and there's something wrong. And I just burst out into tears. And I told her, I just do not feel good. And I don't know what it is, but it's like, since I had COVID, I'm just not right. And she said, well, you need to go to the doctor. And I said, you know what? He's just going to tell me this is long COVID. It takes some people longer to heal. And you're one of those people. So she absolutely insisted. So I went to the doctor, and he ran a bunch of labs, and my kidneys were functioning at 24%. Now, coincidentally, at the beginning of July, I had been to him and changed my GP, and everything was fine. So I said, well, he's Dr. Joe. I call him Dr. Joe. And I said, Dr. Joe, couldn't this just be COVID? It affects some people's, kidneys. And he said, I've never seen anything like this. So he said, you must follow up. And he knew that he had to insist and make another appointment for me to come back, or I probably would not be going down this rabbit hole. But at first he thought maybe it was lupus. Mm-hmm. I was going to a nephrologist, to an endocrinologist, to a hematologist, and lots and lots of tests. At one of them, they had to inject me with some dye or something and then put me in a machine. I don't remember if it was an MRI or CAT scan or what it was. But the lady, when she was putting the dye in me, ran her hands along my forearms and said, oh my gosh, you poor thing, you've been through a lot. And of course, I just burst out into tears. She couldn't find a vein. I had I don't know how many tests that week. But the hematologist ran my light chains, and the top end of that range should be 19, and mine were 24,000. So oh my at that God. Point, we knew there was something major going on. Of course, I went to Dr. Google and found out that it was...
As we all do.
Yeah, multiple myeloma, and I asked my GP, and he just said, you need to follow up. So then I was with the hematologist, and they sent me for a bone marrow biopsy. And one thing you need to know about that is I went down into the operating room, and I was having a panic attack. I was trying to breathe, and this nurse comes over and says, what are you worried about? And I said, everything. I'm worried about you being here. I'm worried about that machine, about what you're going to do to me, every single thing about being here. He tried to calm me down, which was not happening. So,
because it was still a weird time, like with COVID, people are still wearing masks. We're
a little bit.
Yeah. A little, yeah. Still so much weirdness happening too.
It was just, yeah. Oh. And overwhelming at that point, cause I'd had all these other things and no diagnosis yet. And my son was with me, and Colin said, Mom, that guy over there has an I Love Jesus lanyard. And as I'm telling this story, you're going to hear a lot of things that just could not be anything but God's hand in my life and his encouragement when I didn't feel like I could go on anymore, or when I just needed, some hope in some way. So, we called the nurse over and I said, would you pray with me? And he said, yes. And another nurse came over and we held hands and he prayed for me and for calm, and it was so comforting, the calm that came over me after he had prayed. I won't say I was calm, but it was much more tolerable, and I was able to get through the procedure. And that man is going to be important in the story later on as well. So then it's the day before Thanksgiving, November 22nd, 2022, and all my family had come here for Thanksgiving. And I had a hematologist appointment, so my sister goes with me, who's been in oncology her whole career, and he tells me that I have multiple myeloma. And he said, you're going to start chemo next week, and he tells me, we hope for you to have a 2-year remission, and the life expectancy from diagnosis is 5 years. And then he went on and on and on, and I said, wait a minute, 2-year remission, I'm going to go through all this and I'm hopefully going to have a 2-year remission and I'm only going to live for 5 years, even going through with the chemo, the transplant, everything. And he says, those are the statistics, but you're young, you're not in a risk group, you're healthy, so we're going to be very aggressive and you should get more than that. So that's all I heard. My only concern was, am I going to lose my hair?
Mm-hmm. And of course. Yeah.
And they're having this technical conversation, and I didn't understand most of what they were talking about. But he told me, you will lose your hair. You aren't going to lose it yet, but when you go, you're going to need to have a bone marrow transplant or a stem cell transplant after you have go through chemo. But he says it's not a cure. It's just, it gives you time, but it's not a cure. So that was a lot to hear. And it's the day before Thanksgiving, and I've got family here, and I'm just thinking I got to get through the weekend, and then next week I'm having chemo. It was a relief to have a diagnosis finally, but it wasn't what I thought was coming. So a lot of things run through your mind when you get a diagnosis like that, and the number one and two things that I was thinking about were my kids, mm-hmm. and if I go, what happens to them, and my yeah. parents, and knowing that, like, my mom probably would not make it if I had passed. So I thought, you have to fight. Mm-hmm. The hematologist told me, you need to go home and have a good cry. He said, and then we're going to fight.
Wow.
So, but I got myself to the financial attorney, and this was just before I started the chemo. He had moved since I'd been there last because I wanted to get all that in order in case something happened to me. And his new office is right next to Candlelighters. So for those mm-hmm. that you don't know, they deal with mm-hmm. childhood cancers. And I just looked at the Candlelighter sign and thought, okay, God, this mm-hmm. is a sign. It's going to be okay. Yeah. After we went into the boardroom and we sat down, and there's nothing much in there but a table and, you know, chairs, obviously. And, you know, I explained what I needed done, and the attorney turned around, and the only thing in the room besides tables were these like trophy-like things on another table. And he told me that he does 200-mile bike rides for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I had chills. All those yeah. awards were from going on these rides and raising money for yeah. the association that was going to be helping me and that had already sent me so much literature and information. So then I was like, okay, God, I know that this all had been orchestrated before I ever knew I was going to have cancer and to have a blood cancer.
Wow. It's really remarkable, these God winks or these signs that of hope, really, you know, from a silly lanyard to, you know, trophies and these things. The thing is, like, you notice them, though. They're being noticed, because I still believe that these God things are around us. It's just we're not always tuned into it. And it's really remarkable that from the very beginning, you know, you're noticing these things. And so I think that's really remarkable.
Yeah, I think I think these things do happen. I think that's important to note. I think they probably are happening all the time, but we just get so busy, you know, living our life, you know, raising kids, you're going from soccer practice to whatever the kids are doing, to church, you're working all day, you're making meals, you're just kind of, you know, pedaling through the days. And there's not a lot of extra time to really sit and reflect and to just, you know, be with God and to realize, you know, that He's there and to listen. And that's what this experience did for me. It took literally everything off my plate except cancer. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of time to think and I doubted and to, you know, to go to God and say, I can't do this. And, you know, I don't know how I'm going to make it through another week feeling mm-hmm. this way. And all sorts of signs kept coming, and people just at the right time, or people saying the right thing or doing the right thing. And it was overwhelming. It was like every day something was happening. Or there'd be some sort of sign that I knew I wasn't alone and that everything was is happening the way it was meant to happen.
And, you know, it's such shocking news. And like you say, you are young. I think you're younger than I am. So I feel like we're going to call you young. So, and it does knock you, it knocks you off, you know, off center for a moment. And like you said, it does cause you to take time to reflect, and question God. And Pastor David said in his sermon last week, that an unreflective faith can be a dangerous thing. So I think reflection and questioning and doubt, these are natural things, and these are things that help to build our faith. So I'd love to hear about your reflections. There were many, but I pulled four of your prayer chain updates. So again, if you're listening, we have a prayer chain in the church, and We have like 250 people that are very faithful in their prayers for one another. And sometimes we don't even know the people we're praying for. We get to know them through the prayers. Sometimes I meet them. I'm like, oh, that's all right, great. Like, how's the ankle? And so I'd like to read four of these excerpts that I pulled out, prayer requests that you had submitted, and get some of your thoughts, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So you talked about this was just before Thanksgiving. This is the day before Thanksgiving that you had received the news. So this next prayer request, the first one I'm going to read, it's not your first prayer request, but the first one I'm going to read is from December 9th. So this is not too long after that. And, you know, the excerpt I'll read is, yesterday my insurance came through, finally with an in-network facility in California. I should be having the bone marrow transplant in LA at USC. Yeah. That's quick.
It was, at first, there is a facility here that in Las Vegas that does the transplant now, but it was new. And they haven't been in operation for 2 years, so my insurance did not cover them. And they told me that, you know, it wasn't going to be covered at all. It would all be out of network. And I'm thinking this has to be a several million dollar procedure. I'm going to be in the hospital for 14 days. Before that, they're going to collect stem cells, all the drugs to produce those stem cells and, you know, the chemo and everything. So I was trying to figure out, you know, what to do, if this was just, you know, kind of the end of the road for me, if, you know, I just needed to accept that this was my lot in life and, you know, and my time to go and be with the Lord. But, you know, God knows what he's doing. And sometimes he always knows better than we know. And he knew that I needed to be near family in California. I ended up going, oh gosh, it was about several weeks before the transplant. The doctor told me that I could give myself shots to stimulate the stem cells.
No, that's a hard pass.
That's not happening. You might be able to do that, but there's no way I can do that. So I went and stayed with my parents, and my dad gave me the shots every day, and he was driving me back and forth to USC every day. And, you know, afterwards I was so sick and just weak, and, you know, they were cooking for me and looking after me, and it was exactly where I needed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. In that same prayer request, you say, while I have a long and difficult road ahead, know that I'm feeling the prayers and keeping in good spirits as much as I can. Sometimes the load becomes too heavy, as I'm sure will happen from time to time, but I know God is here and I will be a better person from walking this path that was unexpected and unwanted. Chemo drugs continue to kill off cancer cells every week. This week I should have less than last week. I'm not finished doing his work yet, and he will need to carry me through the coming months, hand in hand with Jesus. I will either beat this or it will take me to his feet. Things look very promising, and I don't want to think he's done with me yet here, but I've surrendered to the path he leads me on. Whoa.
Yeah, I tried to negotiate with God.
Yeah.
And I prayed and said, look, I don't feel like my work here is done, but that's not for me to decide. That's when he decides it's time for you to come home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really have to face your own mortality with something like this, and to know, you know, not everybody makes it. So there is a possibility this could take me. And, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm ready or not, that would be my time. And so I kind of, you know, thought about my life, and that if this had happened a few years before, my kids wouldn't have been able, I couldn't have left them for, you know, 2 months while I went to LA to get treated. You know, I was at a place where I had a absolutely ridiculous number of sick days, so I could take off the several months that I was off work, just not feeling well. And after the transplant, when my immune system was too fragile to go back to work, the timing of it all, that was another God thing, that I just, if I was going to have something like this, this was the time for it to happen. So my sister ended up coming for my first few chemo appointments and went to those with me as well. You know, and I was having panic attacks at those appointments. And the first one I was, the chemo I had was, they gave me two shots in my stomach. I'd never had a shot in my stomach before. So I was really nervous. And one of them, they would put the needle in and have to go very slowly. And it took 9 minutes for them to get all the medicine in. So you're sitting here with this needle in your stomach. And of course I'm like hyper, you know, focused on it so I can feel this in me and moving around. And it was awful. So, at the first appointment, they weren't allowing anybody to come back to the chemo room with you yet. So I'm back there. I'm like, okay, I can do this. And I'm trying to do my breathing and all this stuff. And the nurse says, did you bring someone with you? And I said, yeah, my sister's out there. And she said, let's go and get her.
Oh, really?
So they brought her back and, she started joking around and saying what a basket case I am. And I'm, shouldn't be this upset and everything. And, we laughed and then I was able to get through it.
Wow.
But it was very difficult.
It's interesting your sister having dealt with oncology, like that's her field, like that's probably the good and bad news. She probably, she's understanding everything. But then she really is understanding everything. And most of us are a little bit in the dark when we're dealing with our families and whatever. So she understood the seriousness of what was going on.
She did.
With
yes.
you. Yeah.
And even would say to me at appointments and even meeting with the myeloma specialist in LA, she would have this conversation and say, I'll tell you what it means later. Because I was... all this medical jargon and I have no idea what they're talking about.
How great, though, that you had her, because so often doctors deal with this all the time. And so they don't really, I remember even having my second child. I'm like, could you just explain that again? I know I've done this once before, but let me just make sure I do. Yeah. So to have her. So, Wow. That's wonderful. So the next prayer request that I want to read is, just at the end of the same month in December, it's February 26th of 2022, the day after Christmas. And you write, things have been rather hectic in the past week or so. I finally received the oral chemo pills and I have begun taking them daily. With that has come some side effects such as itching under my hair and feeling pain in my hair. Strange, I know. That kept me up for the better part of Thursday night. I was able to get some medication at my fourth chemo appointment on Friday to stop the itching and help me to sleep. The total exhaustion and fatigue has also set in. Christmas Day, I spent sleeping and sitting around with no energy to do anything of consequence. You write, the whole experience has moved very quickly and I find myself just pushing through from one appointment or phone call to the next. Yesterday, I found myself telling someone I have cancer, and hearing the spoken word was a bit shocking. I'm sure there is a lot I haven't really processed, and my emotions are all over the place.
Listening to this, it feels like a lifetime ago, and just it's hard to even think it was, it wasn't that long ago, and yet it seems like a lifetime ago in some ways. And I'm not so sure I really even still have processed what happened. I went straight from, most people that get multiple myeloma, they are at a stage that they call smoldering when they first get diagnosed, and they have to, unlike other cancers, they have to wait until it gets bad enough until they can treat you.
Wait, what?
Yes. You have to wait until there's enough cancer. They just call it smoldering because curable. So even now, I still have cancer.
Oh,
yeah. So, I didn't have time to really, process that I had cancer or anything. It was just straight into chemo, and then it was just get through the transplant. And in my head, it was all just, we're going to get through this. I'm going to have a long remission. I'm going to, after the transplant, it's not coming back. And even though I know that's not the case and that this is not that kind of situation, it's kind of what you tell yourself to get through. So, I even now, to think that I have cancer, it's just hard to, I take chemo pills for maintenance and I still really, I don't know that I've really accepted that. And I don't know really how to like, I guess, cognitively reason that you still have cancer. People go and they get treated. You go to a doctor, you get treated and you're cured. And mm-hmm. I don't really know what to do with the there's no cure part of it. And that it's something you have to learn to live with.
It's really wild to hear you say it, actually, Vanessa, to hear you say I have cancer. Like, still after everything you've gone through, it's hard to hear you say it.
It's hard to, yeah. I don't know how to process that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, I guess, I know I have to live with it. I know it's not going away. I know it's going to come back. We just don't know when. I'm just hoping for a very long remission. And, you know, I don't know what kind of monkey wrench that's going to put on my future and plans that I've made. But I know that God will get me through whatever it is. And, you know, it really makes you live just day by day and really be thankful for the normal things in life.
Mm-hmm.
When I was out of work, I stopped working in February of...
23.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I went back. They wanted me to stay off work for into the whole first semester and go back in January of 24. And my Loma specialist took a look at me and was like, "You're not going to stay home, are you?" And I was like, "I really want to just have a normal life."
Nope.
So she told me, "Okay, you can go back after day 100, which was the middle of September. But she said, if you start getting sick, we are pulling you and you will have to mask because your job is a high risk job."
Yeah.
And, you know, so you need to be very careful. So, you know, but I went back to work. But the things that I missed the most when I was off work and when I was so sick were just normal things. Being able to cook a meal, being able to clean my own home, being able to go to work, you know.
The things everybody grumbles about, right?
Yeah,
oh, no, I have to do this again.
Running errands, going shopping, you know,
yeah.
Going through the grocery store, picking out what you want. Mm-hmm. So I just couldn't wait to get back to the normal things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. In that same prayer request, you go on to say, God has definitely shown me his presence on a daily basis. At chemo on Friday, I was very emotional. As you can imagine, not having slept or had any relief from extreme itching. The lady in the chemo chair next to me was so compassionate. She held my hand and offered some reassuring words. Everyone there is suffering, yet she still found a way to support and offer comfort to me. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing? Isn't yeah. that something?
Well, I was really a mess at chemo.
You know when the other chemo patients are having to...
You're how like, for you, you know you're a hot mess, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There was another lady. I remember this lady, and there was another lady, and I was having a full-on panic attack. This is before they realized I had my nurse, Kayla, who I had to have every single time.
Mm-hmm.
That was another thing that I realized that I had to have. I had to know, you know, that she was there, and she was my comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just the sweetest soul ever. But I was having a full-on panic attack. I couldn't breathe. And, you know, I'm looking at these people who've been hooked up to chemo for hours and hours. And I'm like, you have 10 minutes to sit here. why are you the one freaking out? But this lady, you know, was sitting there. And after I got up and left and got through it, she said, I'll pray for you.
Oh, see? Yeah.
It was so sweet. But this particular lady that I talked about here, she'd lost her hair. She was so frail. She had to be younger than me. And she held my hand and just told me, you know, it's going to be okay. And, you know, I told her, I don't feel good. I feel awful all the time. And I just, you know, this is all too much. I don't think I can make it through. And she said, you'll get used to not feeling well. And I thought, I don't want to get used to not feeling well.
Yeah.
But you kind of do get used to not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
So she was such a blessing, and, you know, Kayla became my nurse, and everybody there knew I needed to go to Kayla, so mm-hmm. from the minute they called me back, they were like, we got Kayla for you, and I'm like, okay, we can do this, and I got my own routine, and I listened to praise music, and I had a few songs that I really calmed me, and I started like breathing and imagining I was somewhere else. Yeah. And Kayla and I became very good buddies. And
yeah.
I don't know, when you're having chemo and you're in that room and there are all those people in there, you really realize how cancer impacts everybody. There was every race in there, every age, people of every economic status, and it doesn't matter. And, you know, they're all fighting for their life. And it's just very sobering.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it's really a good point. Yeah. It doesn't matter the age, doesn't matter. You're right. Any of those things don't matter. Cancer comes. And yeah. In the same prayer request, you say, I've been to the prayer chapel a few times over the past several weeks. I don't know if Jody or our late Scott realize how special and comforting that space that was created has become, but I am thankful for a safe place to feel connected to God. Mm-hmm. So I have a great love for that space too. I've spent more than my fair share of time in the Scott Tyra Prayer Chapel. We spent time there together.
We did.
Yeah, praying and
crying
and laughing and you know, all of it. It's just there's something very special about that space. And I think the fact that it's the Scott Tyra. So for those that don't, those of you that listening don't know, didn't get to know Scott Tyra. He's the late husband of Jody Tyra. He waited for a lung transplant and finally got it. Eventually though, he didn't survive, and just another beautiful soul. And that's such a great to have that space, dedicated to him. Cause he encouraged a lot of people here at the church in their faith. But that space, talk about going to that space, cause we can pray anywhere. You know, we can pray anywhere, but what is it about being in that space?
I don't know. I think there's something about being at church. There's something about it's small. It's not like going into the big sanctuary. It's very intimate. And I just really felt God's presence in there. I don't know what it is about that space. It's just, it's a beautiful place that, you know, to just sit and meditate, to pray, to just feel connected. And, you know, I had a lot of conversations in there with myself and with God and you know, questioning, like, if I go, like, have I done what I needed to do? And what am I leaving behind? And are the people that I'm leaving behind ready to be without me? And it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so that was the end of December, that last excerpt. And then a prayer request I pulled out comes from March 8th. So a couple months have passed now. And you write this. This afternoon, I went to the hematologist and received some good news. My numbers continue to drop, and he said that clinically, I'm doing well. In 3 weeks, I will see him again, and he will be ordering a bone marrow biopsy. The doctor anticipates I'll be ready to begin the process for the bone marrow transplant. Until now, it's felt like I'm spinning my wheels and caught in a chemo cycle. Finally, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. It does feel like that. It's like you go, you know, you're just kind of going from doctor's appointment to doctor's appointment. You know, come back in 3 weeks, we run more blood work. And then we say, okay, good, it's working. Your numbers are going down. And, you know, do chemo again. It's like, oh, I just want to hear this. It's over. And, you know, it's just, when is it going to be time? And at first, the numbers were plummeting like crazy. And then they kind of, you know, level off. And they were still going down, but not as dramatically. So I had in my mind this whole timeline of when I was going to go to LA, and I had a plan. And
we have a schedule.
The school year. Yeah. Because cancer's on the school schedule, right?
And it should be, and, definitely.
So I was going to be out for the summer and maybe a month, and it was going to be all good, and I'd be right back to work. So that's not quite.
I remember you talking about that.
And my doctor was like, okay, well, we're not really, we have to wait for the numbers. And I'm like, well, this is my plan. So they were not on board, and neither was my body, clearly. But in order to be ready for the transplant, I had to have another bone marrow biopsy, which first time that didn't go very well. The second one, we go in, and my son's with me again. And we go down. I'm doing much better by this time. I'd kind of learned some strategies to stay calm. And my son is with me. I'm still having a panic attack, which wasn't quite as intense.
Yeah.
And he says, Mom, that nurse is over there with the I Love Jesus lanyard. This was another God thing and another sign. The man comes over. And he says, oh, I know you. I said, yeah, I'm pretty unforgettable. He said, you know, you're going to be okay. We made it through last time. And I said, yeah. And he prayed with me again. Mm-hmm. And he said, when did you come in last time? And he looked up my records. And he was telling the doctor how much medication to give me. And the doctor said, I don't know, set out some number or something. And he goes, I think we should give her, and was like, double the number.
Is that the calm you down medication?
Yeah. Oh, because you're awake for the, like, you're awake for the biopsy.
Make it a double.
Yeah. And so he gave me some good drugs that time, because I don't remember it half as intensely as I did the first time. But he told me that he was on vacation the week before. And that was the first day back.
Oh, wow.
And I just had chills. The week after that week, mm-hmm. he was going to a different unit that building and opening. So if that week I had not gone, if it had taken another month, that man would not have been there. And, you know, what a blessing he was.
And how often, I mean, for a nurse to stop and pray with you, that's really beautiful. That's, uncommon. In the same prayer request, you say, God has led me the way since diagnosis and is constantly giving me signs that he is here. While multiple myeloma isn't a diagnosis I would have chosen, I know he will use this for good.
Yes, and I don't think the story is really about cancer. Mm-hmm. It's really a faith journey, and with whatever comes your way and with whatever obstacle God puts in your life. It could be a marriage that's dissolved. It could be, you know, a different health problem or job problems or whatever it is that comes your way that, that, you know, God finds a way for us, and he sees us through. And if we just stop and listen and really reflect and relinquish our will to what he wants for us, he will get us through. And, you know, I've already talked about several of kind of the big signs and people that he put in my life right at the right time. And I couldn't have made it through without them. I joined a support group, and there was a lady in the support group who is roughly my age, so she's not in a risk group either for multiple myeloma. And she was having the transplant a week after I had my transplant at a different facility, but her myeloma specialist trained under my myeloma specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were in hospital, we, you know, were texting back and forth. And that's when she said, what is your doctor's name? And I told her, and she goes, oh my gosh, my doctor trained under her, you know, at USC. Yeah. So, cause her doctor was saying, well, who is this person that, you know, your friend, who's her doctor? So yeah, there were just so many supports and, you know, people who came into my life, and to have somebody, not just somebody who has walked the path before, but somebody who was going through exactly what I was going through in real time, that understood and is having the same struggles, was incredible.
Yeah.
And I could not have figured that out for myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, God definitely put these people in my life.
Mm-hmm. And that's really true, because even you saying not just having walked the path, but walking it currently, because, you know, we forget these things. Like, yeah, we've done a lot of things. We had kids and we've gone through different things, divorce, whatever, but it's not as fresh for us. No. And so to have someone that is right there, that's a great gift. I'm glad that God put her in your life, mm-hmm. and you in each other's lives.
Yes.
In the same prayer request, and I, you know, here it is, you're asking for prayers, and yet what you're speaking to us, you say, thank you for the prayers and encouragement. I'm trying to take this a day at a time without getting overwhelmed with the future. Today I focused on Philippians 4:6-7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. You go on to say, I still have a ways to go, and I will only get there by taking it one day and one step or procedure at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was a one procedure kind of thing. It was everything for me to get through chemo each week, to get through the blood draw, to get through the MRI or whatever I was going to have. I learned to live in the moment. I learned to take it one day at a time and to enjoy the moments or the days that you feel well. And on the days that you don't or you can't get out of bed, to be thankful that there are good days.
Yeah, and to surrender to that, because I know you're a checklist task, mm-hmm. get it done. Like, I always, whatever the break is, summer break, like, you've got your plan. Like, you're like, other people are planning their trips, but you're planning your renovation. And you're like, oh, I'm redoing my kitchen. I'm painting my cabinets. I'm always like, wow. Like, so you're in motion at all times. You're yes. getting things done at all times. So it is hard. I get very bummed out when I'm sick in bed, because mm-hmm. it just feels like I'm wasting time, but it's not a waste of time when your body's healing. So
yes, but you, I do focus on all of those things, and it has been very hard to slow down and not have my list that I can check everything off every day. And even now there are days that I go to work and that's about all I do.
Well,
and I feel very unproductive sometimes, but I have friends that have reminded me, Vanessa, what you did before is not normal. So you have to give that up. And this is just, it's a huge adjustment for me, because it's not how I'm used to functioning, even if it might be more normal, whatever normal is.
Right.
But
you're an overachiever.
Difficult.
Yeah. You're an overachiever by nature, but you know, sometimes you just have to, hey, the checklist can be brush teeth, comb hair, maybe.
Maybe take a shower.
Depends. Yeah, that's a good day.
Yeah.
So then let's go forward to April 12th. So this is just a month and maybe 5 weeks after the last one. And this is in 2024.
23.
Yeah. I wrote 24 because I'm just in the head. I'm like, that's not right. Because that was just a few days ago. So yeah, in 2023. And you say the bone marrow biopsy came back and looks good. So we are moving ahead with the transplant. Once again, I'm amazed by God's perfect plan. Today, a lady was seated across from me at chemo who is a special ed teacher with CCSD, like me, and she had a bone marrow transplant using her own cells at USC. Well, I'm having my transplant last July. Of course, I picked her brain for a good hour, and she offered some good advice and things for me to take, etc. She told me that she has ADA accommodations at work due to the continuous treatments. I had no idea that I would qualify for those things. I'm constantly amazed by how God has all the little details figured out, and He knows what exactly I need and when I need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I first got diagnosed, my sister told me, you know, Vanessa, you might not be able to work again. You might have to give up your job. You might have to. And the thought of that, I mean, this is what my whole life has been about, giving to others. And I chose to teach and to teach special education because I can't just go to a job where I make money. I have to feel like I'm doing something valuable and helping people. And You know, I raised my kids on my own, and it, my whole life has not been about me. It's been about doing for others. So the thought that I couldn't go for this job that I've studied for, that I've, you know, worked in for years, that would be gone, was so overwhelming. And she said, you know, it might not be safe for you to work anymore. So when this woman starts talking about the ADA accommodations and stuff that she had, it was like a breath of fresh air. And like, okay, maybe I don't have to quit my job and find something else to do. So that was incredible. My boss has been amazing. She's given me everything I would need and more. And, you know, I don't have to have a formal thing written up, but it's nice to know that in the event that, you know, I worked for somebody else, that I could get those accommodations. Yeah. But later in the story, you know, this year, after I go back to work, the same lady comes back into the story. And it's just another thing that I could not have done this at all. This woman was a special education facilitator. So she was working in a school at the time. And that was last year. This year, she became a coordinator. So she was giving a training for the CEFs. And I took over the CEF responsibilities when I went back to work.
Explain that to our listeners.
It's like you're kind of making sure that all the special education stuff in your building is compliant. So I was a special ed teacher. We didn't have a CEF, and there really wasn't anybody else to do that. So come January, I took that over, as well as being, you know, a SPED teacher for the rest of this school year.
Oh, I see. You're really pacing yourself. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not very good at that. So next year they've hired somebody. I'm glad that I have been able to pass that part on and I can get back to just working with my kids. But this woman was, so I had to go to lots of trainings as well, which probably
is. I'm like, right, okay.
Yeah, so anyway, one of the trainings, she was leading the training. And at first I was like, is that her? I don't want to go up and say something. I feel stupid. Like, you know, she's not saying anything to me. But she kept kind of looking at me, and I kept looking at her. And then she mentioned in the training how she had these two young children, and she shared with me when we were at chemo that she had like a 2- and a 4-year-old, and she couldn't see them for like 3 months after she had her transplant.
Oh my gosh.
And how difficult that was. And she started talking about her children during this training. And so I went on Facebook and looked her up, and sure enough, she has leukemia. And so I sent her a email and said, I don't know if you're the lady who spoke to me at chemo, but, you know, you were seated, or you were in the training I was in yesterday. And she said, yes, I thought that might be you. And I wasn't sure if I should say anything. And so it was like, you know, and here, I don't know how many people are even in special ed in the district, but lots and lots and lots of people. And for me to run into her again at this training, on that night that I just happened to take the training, she was the trainer, and it just was incredible how many people just kind of were just there right when I needed them to be there.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. God is so good. So, yes. So where are you now, Vanessa? How are things going? And as you're looking back, it's probably kind of weird to revisit those prayer requests. And like you said, it feels like a long time ago. And you think about the journey you've been on. How can you speak to any doubts that maybe you had or maybe you have today? Hmm. That was a lot of questions. That was like 17 questions.
Yeah.
You could pick one.
Well, I'm considered to be in remission, but it's an incurable cancer. So I'm on maintenance chemo, and we're waiting. I'm being monitored. I've been going to the hematologist every 6 weeks. The longest they're ever going to let me go is 3 months before they check on me. I'm hopeful there's some people in my support group who have gone off the maintenance chemo after, you know, 7 to 10 years. And they won't say they're cured, but I feel like it's, you know, the closest thing to a cure that you're going to have, and not to be on all these medications anymore and all the medications you're on because of the side effects of the medications.
Right.
So, you know, I'm hopeful for that. However, when I share that to my hematologist, he tells me, he puts his pencil down and looks at me and says, you know, this is an incurable cancer. You know, that these are a couple people in your group out of, you know, and this is not, they're not the norm. But it's like, but how could there be more than one in my
group?
Right,
right.
So yeah. I'm like, well, that's going to be me. That's my goal, that's going to be me. And hopefully that is me, you know, even if it's not the norm. But I feel like I've been given time. And 20 years ago, this cancer was a death sentence. It was a pancreatic cancer. And, you know, there's lots going on with multiple myeloma right now. There's lots of research. There's lots of new medications. There's things changing all the time. My myeloma specialist in LA said that they used to do two transplants and they would collect enough stem cells. They could barely get enough out of me to do one transplant, but they used to collect stem cells and save them to do another transplant later. And she said, I'm not doing that anymore because there's going to be something better by the time this comes back.
Wow.
But I feel still like the time I've been given is a gift and God wants me here. If he didn't, I would have gone. And it was so difficult to go through what I went through that there's something he wants me to do. So I'm trying to listen more and to act, you know, when you feel that nudge. You know, in a way, I feel like the whole experience has been a blessing. And that sounds a little bit strange, but, you know, most people go through their life and they really never know what they mean to other people or the things that they do and how it impacted other people. And at your funeral, people sit and they talk about you and what a great person you were and all these memories, and you never get to hear them. And I got to hear all those things. And I had people, you know, doing things for me and beyond what a friend would do and going way beyond when you're, you know, you've just, I was in the hospital in February of 23 with a kidney infection and came home and couldn't keep my medications down. And my friend who brought me home from the hospital was in the bathroom with me. And, you know, I'm throwing up and I'm on the toilet and she's holding them at pills and she's got a drink in front of me to try to get my pills in me.
Sweet
and I said, look, you've seen way
too much information.
You know, and I'm crying and I'm just in pain and I'm not well at all. And, you know, you keep coming back for more. I don't know why, but, you know, you really realize who your tribe is and the people who really do love you and just how far they will go for you. So I feel blessed to have known that and to realize, you know, to have been forced to slow down and to listen more and to not be in such a rush all the time. And that's a blessing. Even though I'm struggling with that still, it's, you know, I can see that there's good that has come from that. So I guess my perspective is when there's difficult circumstances in your life, you have two choices. We can sit and say, poor me, and cry and never, I've been there too. And, you know, I think the key is you have to get out of that poor me mentality. And to say, well, this is the hand I've been dealt. This happened, and I have to learn from this and move on. And even when things are bigger than you, cancer was bigger than me. The medical stuff was way beyond me. But it made me rely on God and his strength to get through every day. And I think that that's kind of the message that we have to it's beyond us, and, you know, yeah, there is the poor me stage you go through, but we have to get out of that and move on. And if we, there are people who never do, but I think that's what we need to try to do to come out of that. I still, you know, am concerned about the future. You know, I have my plans at how long I want to continue to work for, and, you know, I don't want to have to retire early. But it's also not in my hands anymore. And I'm hoping that I can stay well enough to keep working. But, you know, I have my plans, and then there's what happens in life.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of waiting. Another God thing that happened since I was diagnosed is while I was in the hospital, I knit. And I made a prayer shawl while I was in the hospital, and after I returned back to my parents' house and was waiting until I got clearance to come back to Vegas. When I finished that prayer shawl, there was a lady who, you know, came to our attention, who was a single mom who had breast cancer. And Sally asked the person who brought them up, you know, what kind of colors do they like? And they said brown. And the prayer shawl that I had knit was beige. And it was like this prayer shawl was meant to go to her, one single mom to another who is,
wow,
who is struggling with cancer and not knowing, you know, what the future holds. So I feel like God used me in that way. I don't know why I picked up the beige to make a beige prayer shawl next, but I did. The people that I've met through the support group that I go to are just amazing humans. And I am part of a group that I never wanted to be a part of, and they didn't either. But, you know, I've been blessed by their stories as well. Laurel Timms has a friend who is local and ended up having the transplant locally after I did, and she put me in touch with her, so I was able to support her through her transplant and encourage her, because it is a very difficult, it's not a surgery, but a procedure, and the healing is difficult, and she's a Christian, and I've connected with her through the process as well. And I've decided, I had a couple people from different circles tell me that I needed to write a book about my cancer journey.
Yes,
and I thought, okay, I guess this is another nudge. And I've learned that when you feel that nudge, you need to act. So I don't know if anything's going to come of it, but I've started writing down some thoughts. And I'm trying to put it together, and I don't know if it's publishable or if it's just something to share with people who, you know, maybe are going through something similar. My first, when these people told me, I said, well, this isn't really a story about cancer. It's not going to be a book about cancer. It's a faith journey, and it's how God gets you through the tough times in life and everything that He puts in place. For you. I just really believe it happened. There's nothing special about me. There's nothing special about my journey. We all go through things, and it's just about, when you know you can't go on anymore, about trusting Him and about listening and letting Him, lead the way for us. And that's exactly what He did for me. And put the right people in place and the right circumstances. His time is perfect. And we just have to let Him do Him and stop fighting the process and having our own agenda. So that's what's been going on since. I went back to work in September, and I had one week off when I was really not very well. And I didn't know if maybe, you know, the job was too much, if maybe I was too exposed. And, you know, that was upsetting. But since then, I've been okay. And I've
learned to listen to my body, and I just can't go like I used to, and that I have to stop and rest. And when I know now what I feel like when I need to rest. And, you know, I really rely on the weekends to try to carve out some time to just do nothing. And I'm learning to do that a little bit better.
Yeah. and you don't have like 15 home improvement plans for the summer vacation,
well, right? I still have those.
I'm like, okay.
But I'm learning to
maybe just make
pace
breaks.
Myself a okay. little bit better. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, rest in between.
Yeah.
So.
I'm excited to hear you write about, because you're a beautiful writer. You know, I like also that you're saying this is not a story about cancer. You're right. I mean, surviving, we all have different things to survive. It's a book about, you know, getting through things and surviving things and, you know, using your faith. I know that part of your faith, a big part of your faith, is rooted in other people have shared their faith and their stories with you. You're, you know, being just even just a part of the Prayer Shawl Ministry, just that group of ladies and what they share. I know. So I hear in your story how you've been able to help other people through your story. And I think writing a book is a great way to just really reach a lot of people. So I hope you keep doing that.
I feel like there were so many people who helped me. And that's just what you do. They helped me to get through it. So in turn, I need to go and help other people maybe who are struggling or, you know, who have, you know, a diagnosis or maybe they're going to have multiple myeloma and, you know, to let them know that they can get through it. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. Well, Vanessa, I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing. Again, this series on doubt, a kind of diagnosis that you have, is the time that a lot of people go to doubt. We all have doubts. It seemed like a really perfect time for you to share your faith. And you don't even know how many people you've touched through your prayers, your updates in the prayer chain. And so I thank you for sharing more of your story. There's so much more to it that, you know, there needs to be a part two, because I know it's like how you get your kids through that and how you get your students, you know, it's sometimes it's not just you going through this. There's a lot of other people. And yes. Even though it's supposed to be about you, I know you care about other people. And I know a big part of your story was how you manage the other people that had to deal, your parents, you know, just telling the news to other people. That's a lot too. So I know we have many more things. And so I hope that you come back and share more of your journey and continue to share your journey. And like you said, there is no cure. So it's something that you do continue to live with. But the truth of the matter is, anyone who has cancer and is cured, they also live with that, okay, the recurrence or the, you know, the possibility. It's something once people have dealt with that. So I think there are a lot of people that can relate to that feeling. And I'm sure that every test that comes up, every blood work, every whatever, you kind of go through that again. And so my question for you is how is it that those of us that are listening can be praying for you right now?
To pray for a cure. We need a cure for cancer and for multiple myeloma. They're close. And I know for multiple myeloma, there's a CAR T therapy that may be a cure, and they're doing lots of research and other things that are coming on the horizon as well. Pray for hope and for people who are struggling, that, you know, that they would have the hope to be able to continue through their journey and to really fight this disease, because it's very difficult. And for the physicians, I can't imagine, you know, being a doctor and losing patients and, you know, doing everything that you can do, but, you know, watching them suffer. And also just that God will use my coming days and the story to give other people hope, and that, you know, he will use me for whatever purpose he has planned for me in the future, and that I will, you know, listen and do what he wants me to do with the rest of my life.
Yeah, I have no doubt that you will. So before we pray, I just want to, again, one thing, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask this question, but if someone is just diagnosed or is going through or knows someone just being diagnosed, again, Dr. Google, not the best place to go.
No.
Is there a place that you would direct someone?
If you have a blood cancer, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. They sent me a box. Anyone who's diagnosed with a blood cancer, they'll send you a box, and there's little books in it about everything for your caretaker and how to cope and the financial part, the emotional part, things you can do, meditating, praying. I learned about sound baths in their literature and actually went to one a couple weeks ago with my Loma friend. They were an invaluable resource. And get yourself connected with others and a support group. There's all sorts of support groups. I asked a friend who's in charge of nursing at Mountain View Hospital, and she found the support group for me told and asked around about which one was really good and helpful, and that's the one I went to. So I think getting connected with others who've been there before and, you know, maybe who are still struggling so that you don't feel so isolated and alone, because it is very isolating. And you know, when other people are there and you're trying to be strong for them, it's very hard. So it's nice to have somebody who's there or who has been there who understands all that.
Yeah. And if you're in the Las Vegas area, we do have a fabulous prayer chapel. You're invited to come and sit and we will pray with you, or we'll leave you alone to pray. But we'd love to pray for you too. Well, with that, let's close in prayer. Gracious and loving God, we just thank you for Vanessa and for her story. It's not a story about cancer, as she says. It's a story about all that she's been through. And we hear a story of courage and hope and faith and so many other things, Lord. And so we thank you for the ways in which Vanessa has been able to use her story to help and bless others. And Lord, we do lift up Vanessa and her health, and we thank you for the remission that she's in right now. And we just ask for continued health for her body, and to be able to do so many things that she wants to do for others. And Lord, we continue to pray for a cure for cancer and for multiple myeloma. We pray for those who are struggling right now to have hope and to be able to put people in their lives and opportunities that they can see hope in you. For the physicians and the health providers who care for the patients, we just ask you to give them strength and endurance and peace in knowing that what they do and the way that you work through them is important. We pray for the many ways in which you will use Vanessa's story to give hope to others, whether it's through writing a book or sharing her story or walking beside someone, sharing a shawl that she has knitted. We just pray that you will continue to show ways in which she can be the light, your light in this world. We give you thanks again for this time together, and we pray for all those listening that this will be a blessing for them. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.